Today's discussion is going to be on the impact of religious images on black self-image. And I think in a way, you know, it has impact on all of us, because we are trying, particularly as I've noticed here, we're trying to be an inclusive society as opposed to an exclusive society. And I just want to read a little bit, and then I just want to open up for discussions and some feedback. The impact of images are very powerful. We've all heard the phrase, a picture's worth a thousand words. What you see is what you get. See it, believe it, and become it. Spiritual religious images are our most sacred images. They represent the highest and the best, our ideal, our origin, and our greater destiny. They subtly, yet most powerfully, shape who we are and who we are becoming. Spiritually, they are guides. They mark our spiritual path. When these images take human form, they become particularly potent. For here is a visual affirmation of our affinity, our connection with the divine. The Creator made us in His image. Imagination, it is said, is the greatest form of flattery. And we are flattered that our Creator thought so highly of us that the One made us in His likeness. So then, what is the impact of the message when all that is good, holy, divine, and sacred in human form looks like somebody else? And this somebody else has a history of saying people who look other than they do are generally less than they are. Now it appears it's official, coming from the highest irrefutable source. To refute this borders on blasphemy. A black person or African-American or American Indian or anyone of color on a religious path in America has no representational foothold or anchor. Not only is there no representation image of him, but often the arch villain, the greatest evil, Beelzebub, Lucifer, the devil, is at times depicted as dark and blackened. Now, all this can be shrugged off and by as irrelevant depictions by a hardy seeker of colors. Yet the continual bombardment of this subtle imagery over 400 years, backed by outright statements and policies of inferiority, leaves little room in the subconscious for maneuvering against the onslaught. If you can stretch your imagination and imagine the reverse situation, where maybe the history was that Africans went out and colonized Europeans, and consequentially, after 400 years of colonization, the images that you had to pray to, worship in front of, were God the Black Father, or a Black family, or Black Jesus Christ. All the saints were Black. So that is some of what is approaching, or is the possibility of the situation with blacks. Many black parents who send their kids to religious schools do so not only for the better education, but for the moral and spiritual learning that comes from going to these schools. Kids are very fertile minds, very open minds, and they receive these messages of who they are and who they want to become in terms of what they see. So it's something that is, I think, important, and I think it's something that we have to come to terms with in terms of becoming an inclusive society. I think that my formative years, I spent 8 years in Catholic grammar school, and I treasure those 8 years because there was in in conjunction with what my parents was teaching me in terms of right from wrong and being responsible and believing that there is a greater good. There was the intensity of and support that I was learning in the schools. Yet I think that one of the things that I bumped up on, and at one point I had even envisioned being a priest, and I didn't become a priest, or at that time, was because I just didn't think I was worthy enough. That was one that I just didn't think I was worthy enough. But there in reflection, looking, there was this gap in the road to being able to reach that pinnacle of correctness, which was in a certain way affinity of whiteness. You could only go so far. If I didn't know of any black saints at the time, I didn't see any images. Now, you know, I don't know if the reverse is should be true. I don't think that we necessarily should all have black images, but particularly in terms of God, who, as is so well brought forth, is not necessarily of any male or female gender. When we start to make that Most High, that Supreme Being, a particular gender or particular color, it does bring about exclusion for the rest of us. And if we are deeply sincere about seeking and trying to become more like that image, in a certain way we subconsciously, or I subconsciously, bump up on an impasse here. And it's a subtle thing. It's just a subtle thing that takes root over a period of years. And the subtlety, you know, as I said, is supported by the other messages that you get. So, you know, these are some of the issues. I think one of the reason that a lot of, let me put it this way, a lot more African Americans either fall away from the church or go to other religions like Islam is in part because they're looking to find some representation of themselves in the religion in which they become part of. And so, you know, if we want to address that migration, then I think that is one of the issues that has to be addressed. So I'm not going to talk a whole lot. I just wanted to throw it out there, and then I just wanted to get feedback. And here again, I feel that the group here is an inclusive group, so it's not a we or them or whatever. It's just that, you know, I feel like we're one consciousness, and I'm just trying to bring this to your awareness and sharing the discussion. So is there anybody who would like to speak on it or has any feelings about it? Some of the possibilities or thoughts, do we not have any human images? Is that practical? Do we want to have, should each group have the image in their particular depiction? Should blacks just take the form and paint it black, which a lot of blacks are doing? What does that say in the short and long term? What road should we take? So, any thoughts on that? Anybody want to comment on that? Yes.
I attended a church for a long time that had some very open ideas about color,
mm-hmm.
or race, whatever, wherever it came from, and. One thing that they emphasize quite a bit is when you see someone new, a stranger, we'll say, and instead of looking at the person, the body, you look at them through the eyes of Christ, and through in your own mind and thinking and out loud in their presence. I see the Christ within you. So it has really nothing to do with where you come from, what color you are, what your background is. It's you have the Christ within you. And that's what you look at. And then another experience I had working in the hospital at night. It was an evening shift. And one of the doctors that was there, an elderly man, I liked to talk to because he was very informative. And somehow or another, we got to talking about babies and their intelligence. How can you tell how smart a baby's going to be when he gets a little older? And so the subject of black and white came in. And he said he has heard all these stories about how much smarter the white babies will turn out to be, or something of that sort. And he said that he worked in Africa for a number of years doing, I don't know just what, but I don't remember now. But what impressed me was what he said was they tested, I don't know how they did it, intellectually, I guess, how well the black babies responded to touch or whatever they were, whatever they were testing. And then also compared them to some white babies there. Of course, there weren't that many white babies to compare with. But they found that the black babies did just as well as some even more than the white babies. That he could not see that there could be a differentiation. Because actually, we're all, we all have the same insides. Mm-hmm. Even so, you see white on the outside or black on the outside, you're all the same inside. And everybody is influenced by their parenting, whether, depends on the attitude of parents a lot. That's how the child is going to grow up and feel. And so, you know, this man, this doctor I was talking to, had a lot of ideas about children. And of course, my forte in my nursing experience has been newborn babies and pediatrics, children in general. And I really liked it. And every time I hear anything about the newborn baby or the young children, of course I have my ears open, and I'm interested. So, when I was a child, living with my parents, we lived in a residential area where there were no blacks allowed, and every home in there was quite very nice, very expensive. So it sort of drew people who had money to the area. And my father had two or three strokes, was not very well, sitting out in the backyard under a tree. And a man came along in a truck. And he came around to the backyard where my dad was sitting. And he said, "Sir, I've noticed that you have a problem on your roof. There's looks a possibility of leakage or something like that." I just heard my dad telling my mother, so I can't tell you the details. And my dad says, "I didn't notice that. I'm glad you told me." He says, "But I could fix it. I have the material to use to fix it." And so my dad said, "What would you charge?" I cannot remember details or numbers, but from what I heard my dad tell my mother, it was a very nominal fee. And he says, "He sounds like a very honest man, so I think I'll just have him go ahead and fix it. He can do it." So he did. And then when pretty soon my mother called out the kitchen window and she says, "Lunch is ready." And so men had not started work yet. And so my dad says to him, well, come on in. My wife says lunch is ready. Let's have something to eat before you start to work. And this man that came in was a black man. And he said, well, no, you go ahead and eat. I'll start my job. And but my dad insisted, you know, it's lunchtime. You're going to be hungry. You'll do better if you eat a little. And so my dad went in the house. And pretty soon my mother came out with a tray with sandwiches and soup and milk or whatever. And there's a little table out there under the tree with chairs too. So he sat down there. And my dad says, why didn't you like to come in and have lunch with us? He says, it's not my custom. We never go in a white man's house and have eat with him. My dad says, you know, that's not good. That's not good because Jesus ate with all the disciples. You know, when you break bread with a person, you're extending friendship. And so anyway, the man fixed the thing. But as a young person, seeing my dad's attitude toward this man impressed me a lot. Even though we lived in a community where there were no blacks. And but he was not prejudiced in any way. A very Christian man.
Thank you.
I'm sure that we are under the influence of that nemesis of advertisement.
Yes.
And this advertisement has been going on for centuries. And if we consider that God has made an our image, and if I was to take that as a personal note, I'm sure that he would not have hair. That's
right.
We're subject to advertisement.
Yes.
And having done some traveling, we've seen some advertisement in old portraits, old art masters, and so forth. And I question whether that is accurate. I don't like so much advertisement, it's not accurate.
I'm not sure that you question whether...
The artwork.
Okay. I follow you. All right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not accurate. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been subject to this advertisement over countless centuries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the black person absorbs that advertisement like anybody else does.
Correct.
And unfortunately, as an individual, I don't have a solution. If someone would ask me, well, what would you do about it? I don't think I have a solution, and that's troublesome. You can't pass it off with a cliche. I'm sort of in a quandary, and I'm sure the black person or the American Indian or whoever you might be would find themselves in that only a deeper quandary.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Gordon. A couple of points you brought to my mind was one of the things that this discussion is to do, because these issues are deep and they're old and they're complex, is just to bring about the awareness. That's just the first thing, that we're not necessarily trying to come to a conclusive solution at this point. We just want to promote the awareness. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you mentioned about the advertisement is there's a saying, something to the effect that a lie told often enough becomes factual or fact. And the fact that these depictions may not be accurate, in one sense, has no bearing on the impact of the images in terms of people taking them as fact, you know. It's like I'll find myself singing songs, talking about advertisement, of products that I can't stand, but because I've heard it so much, and I'm singing it, and I don't like this product. Why am I singing it, you know? So, going back to the trying to find some solutions, there's an African proverb that says, announcing the name of the medicine is not the cure, you know? And So it's not a cure here, it's just an awareness. And then addressing what the lady said earlier, about the intelligence of black children is that expectation they have found a lot of times is what promotes intelligence. If you expect a person to be able to handle things, you know, they did a situation where there was a group of underachievers, and the teacher who came in to teach them were told that these were black kids, that these underachievers were the overachievers. And so she came in, and when they didn't get it the first time, she felt that it must be her. She wasn't doing something right. So she went back and she looked at her approach. And eventually, working with these, what she thought, overachievers, they ended up overachieving because she found a way to work with them. And so, you know, when we're dealing with the impact of expectations and the environment, you know, we're looking at specifically the environmental impact of religious images among black kids who are often told in so many different ways that you're not going to make it. Statistically and economically, you're not going to make it. And then to compound that with the spiritual overtone of saying, you know, that that which you strive for spiritually, there is no representational foothold for you. There's no, you have no models. You have no success. You know, factually, at some point, Christ was some color, and I guess if we knew what color he was, then the correct thing would be that would be his color. If he was black, if he was white, or whatever, and we'd have to deal with that because that's the color it is. And we don't, I don't know, there's some debate about what color he was. But if we just go to the saints, you know, and most of the saints that I'm aware of are white, but there are some black saints. If we would just be able to bring those out a little bit more, so that kids' spiritual inclinations that they have, that they can see, not that the color really makes a difference, but to just say that these heroes, these spiritual heroes, come in all colors, and to give that kind of subtle environmental encouragement, you know, in terms of the images, you know. It just goes back to the whole thing about inclusiveness, you know.
Depends on how he thinks, regardless of what color. Mm-hmm. But how he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Environment has an awful lot to do, whether it's black and white. White children growing up in a home where there's no parental education, and they're put down even as children by their own parents, and they have no self-esteem, and therefore they don't improve, grow mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, or any other way. Physically, yes, they grow, but to help them succeed in our society, they have to feel good about themselves. They have to have a good self-image. And if they can behave in a manner that all society approves, they will see the reflection of other people approving of their mannerisms, behavior, speech, how they talk. I've heard black men talk on TV that sounded very impressive. They spoke well, they sound very well intelligent,
mm-hmm.
and have a lot of good ideas. So, you know, if people could look at what this person stands for, what is he or she doing? And with women too. This is very important because it's the mothers that nurture the children and sort of give them their basis.
Yeah, as Martin Luther King said, by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. I was paraphrasing something that you said with Martin Luther King when he said, "Let us judge each other by the content of our character, not by the color of our skin."
Oh, that's right.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Perhaps play devil's advocate, but religions seem to me to reflect the personality of the area they come from. Mm-hmm. Northern people are traditionally very conservative and unemotional, and those religions reflect that. Warm countries have more emotional content to their religions. Is it so bad that they, why can't we appeal to, if Orientals or Blacks or whatever, like, feel comfortable, let's put it that way, and can relate to a certain thing, why can't they have it? Just as a Norwegian wouldn't feel comfortable with a Holy Roller Church. So that's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and maybe I'm not saying it very well.
Well, let me see if I understand what you're saying. If you're saying what I think you're saying, I agree that diversity is good. And you know, there's a saying that unity in diversity. I particularly wouldn't want to see an all bland situation. I like that there is the different spices. There's different expressions, energies, whatever, because that's in keeping with the order and nature. There's all this variety, and so you know we're not looking. I'm not particularly hoping for. To me, it would be just as wrong if there was all black images in all the churches. That wouldn't be the answer either. And maybe what Gordon was saying is part of the possible answer is that. Is we can all have images that we can relate to and feel comfortable as long as we realize that this is a representation, a symbol, and not
the answer
or whatever. Yeah.
I was about 11 when I saw my first picture of Jesus, not blonde haired and blue eyed. And it was just
striking.
Like this big explosion. Yeah. At first it was like, that's not Jesus, and then it was just really an opening thing. I mean, it just was, it expanded the images. I think it gives opportunity to see in new ways.
Yeah. Well, you know the thing, I mean, what you're saying and what Gordon is saying, you know, if we all, you know, if every culture had the Jesus and the images in their culture, then maybe what it would allude to me is what it already alludes to, is that consciousness, that Christ consciousness, that is really all colors and all people anyway. And we're just seeing these various manifestations of expressions of what the color is, you know. But what happens is when the major culture affects the subcultures, you know, to the point where they feel that because they are not like that particular culture, that they are less, that's where the danger comes in. You know, it's like you alluded to about blacks speaking very intelligently. And I heard a conversation before I came up here, it was very interesting, regarding English and black English. And should blacks learn English and forsake black English, which is kind of a cultural thing, and then that, is that a cultural bias? And that's another whole subject. You know, I don't even want to get into that now, you know. But it's interesting in how it's perceived. They said that Harold Washington, they were told that he sounded illiterate. And if you ever listen to Harold Washington, he was anything but illiterate. He had a very good command of the English language and the vocabulary. But it was part of that expectation that if you're black, you're not going to be able to speak. That it's not the speaking, and it becomes the listening. Mm-hmm. And the expectation of the listening, you know, is happening. So I don't want to digress, but it's part of the situation is that the impact of these images, you know, you almost have to, I mean, you have to do, divorce yourself from saying that this image is the image as a black person. You know, I have to just divorce it, you know. But I think it does work its impact over a period of time.
You know, I really don't see the difference in a lot of white people, men and women. Mm-hmm. There's some that you admire because of their behavior, mm-hmm. the way they present themselves. And there's some, they have certain characters. I mean, they might be in the affluent class, a lot of money and dress and everything, but their behavior you would not accept.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, when you classify blacks according to certain things,
mm-hmm.
You'll find that in the white community there are people that you would criticize or you wouldn't approve, I'll say, because mm-hmm. of some of these things. That
characteristics.
Yeah.
Actions and attitudes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm thinking it would be good for all of us to see different images of God and Christ and even the Holy Spirit. Why is the Holy Spirit always a dove? Why not a robin or a bluebird or something?
Yeah. Yes.
And not only for the self-esteem of a black child seeing images of a black God, but also if I saw images of gods of other color, I would then connect all the qualities of God,
yes.
goodness and kindness
yes.
and caring, with people of all colors.
Yes, exactly.
And I think
exactly.
that would be helpful.
Yes, I agree totally.
Because until I have some personal contact with somebody who's different in any way, I sometimes my only reaction is fear until I get to know that
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
And a positive image would be nice to have.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're moving towards, and even in terms of the diversity, is the diminishing of the fear and the separation, mm-hmm. which comes from the unknown or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dan.
Yeah. Actually, one thing I remember from childhood is we had the Oxford manger scene, the little cardboard cutouts and boxes up this long from Oxford. I'm sorry, kid. But one of the wise men was black.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember as a child lying on my stomach under the Christmas tree, and just, there was something about that was real teaching to me, that very early that a black person was
mm-hmm.
part of the story. But then, but besides that, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So I wonder about, this goes on with what somebody else has had. Instead of, Japanese people having only Japanese Christ and so on, if we would fill our churches with all kinds of different images.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just kind of look at the walls of our church buildings and see what is being taught to our children just visually, and how could it become more inclusive in the place. And the ELCA, the Board of World Missions, makes available religious pictures of all different, from all different countries, you know, and I think they would be wonderful in our churches. The other thing I wanted mm-hmm. to ask was that I'm uncomfortable sometimes with the idea that I should look at you or somebody else and not think of you as black or African American, but we're all inside the same, you know, and
mm-hmm.
discount the differences. And sometimes I think it's healthier to really see each other with our differences, only deeply appreciate those differences. I think you mentioned like a garden, you know. We don't look at a garden with all the different colors of flowers and say, well, you know, inside their flowers are all the same.
Yeah, the tulip's not the rose, so the tulip's incorrect.
Yeah, we don't seem to have any need to say that about flowers because we just have a deep appreciation for the beautiful diversity.
Yeah.
I think that would lead to looking at each other and recognizing differences and learning from them and saying what you have to teach us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that were you through there? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead. If you're on a roll, go with it. Spirit may be talking through you. Cause go ahead.
Go ahead. That's all.
No. To me that is definitely going in the right direction, the right path. You know, we want unity in diversity. We don't want this sameness and the diversity. You know, the more comfortable we get within our own selves, the more and deeply we can appreciate the diversity. That's not what I want to say. The more that the diversity can be intense in itself. You know, I mean, once we all are really comfortable in our own culture, then to see an Indian brother walk in full garment and really doing his Indian thing, it's not a separation, it's a, yeah, you know. Because it, in trying to all get to be like each other, you know, we weaken that, you know, it's like, okay, the rose is not the tulip, but if the rose is a little bit more like the tulip, then maybe that'll be work. But no, we want the rose to be strongly the rose and the tulip to be strongly the tulip so we can appreciate each of the differences, you know. So I think that's great.
One experience we had at PLU is over the last year, so we've had 7 students from Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
When they started to come, so many people said the problem is they won't want to go back. You know, they'll see everything we have in our way of life, and they won't want to go back to Namibia. They'll want to figure out some way to stay here. And sure enough, when they came, the first thing they discovered was a mall.
Corruption.
There's no any store in the mall like that comes in the Indian streets. But then they had no desire at all to stay here. They just wanted to go back to Africa, you know. And so we talked about it, and I found, you know, and found out they feel sorry for us because we're lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it says we can't understand why anybody would want to live in a big house with a fence around it and not talk to your neighbors for a week. So they couldn't wait to get back where life is whole in terms of neighbors, family, extended family, all the joy of people.
Yeah.
And that,
and then
we had something then when we were afraid at first that they would only, you know, think we were. We discovered we had something marvelous to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when, you know, when we try to have everybody become one. Being inclusive does not mean everybody to be the same, you know, because you lose the benefit of that objectivity to point things out to you. You know, it's like you know, we're all bringing something to the table, you know. And I kind of see the different cultures and races. Everybody is bringing something uniquely to the table. And if you have to become like me, then you drop your gift for the table. One other thing that you said is about the wise man who was black. You know, I remember that very distinctly, and I remember latching on to that one black figure. Oh, there's a black figure. There's somebody that reminds me of me, you know, and because it was the only one that I really like, oh, you know, yeah, remember that wise man, he was black, and it got to be the mantra almost, you know, because there was no other place to look for any, you know, any other identification, you know. Gordon, I think you were going to say something.
I was going to comment about bringing in some diversity into our religious setting, and belonging to a choir, church choir, we have been experimenting through the efforts of our director, to bringing in that diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit there and I watch the faces of the congregation. One, you may see a almost, I don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one will, hey, this is great. And it doesn't, it takes time in a congregation to bring that diversity to a reality. And it can happen. And I guess it happens one person at a time. I guess that's our only salvation, that it happens one person at a time. And that's how I see it growing, one person at a time.
Yeah. You know, that strikes a, I gotta make sure, what time do we start, 11:40? Okay. And then I wanna get to you. It's a little, huh? Okay, I wanna get to Louise and then you, or you and Louise, whoever was in this. But that's a very delicate situation, because you definitely don't want to force, you know. Someone says you can force legislations, but you can't force the heart. You don't want to force it. Yet at the same time, if there's not some kind of, what's the word, inducement or movement or progression, the person who's like this may just stay like that, unless there's some kind of impellingness towards inclusion, towards,
one,
you know, those kind
of two people has to make that start.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't expect, you know, a whole, you can't change a whole congregation.
No, I'm not saying
but
that.
It's one or two people to start the movement.
Right. But I'm saying I'm wondering, you know, like what King did in terms of the marching and stuff and creating policies or attitudes or whatever to create a change, and he was looked at as you're trying to do this too fast. Mm-hmm. You're going too fast with this. You got to give people time to change. You know, it's the same thing now with the gays in the military. It's like, well, you know. So and there's validity on both sides of the argument. You know, it's just you know. Who was the person that I know?
I'm very interested in the impact of the images of God that we use, and mm-hmm. very sensitive to what you said about the dominant culture,
mm-hmm.
and that there's a sense in which there really are two things that are going on. And one is those of us, who, insofar as we're part of the dominant culture, to broaden our own horizons and really shatter the idols that we've made of certain images of God, and to mm-hmm. to be able to turn loose of those, whether those are gender specific or race specific or color specific mm-hmm. or culturally specific, but that somehow we have to understand that the God we're most cozy with
mm-hmm.
is not the God who mm-hmm. is not the God of all creation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another side of it that I don't think we've really begun to talk about, and that is what the dominant culture image of God has you started talking about this, but we've sort of digressed, I think, to our own agendas of expanding our minds, I remember what it was like for me the first time I really could image God as woman,
mm-hmm.
not just as non-sexist, but really as woman,
right.
And what a powerful memory that is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there are people in the room who have any experience in working with people of color and helping them move outside of that imposed kind of idolatrous image of God that's mm-hmm. been there too. What are the techniques? What are the ways? I mean, I know how long it took me to do that, and I'm a person who gives a lot of attention to my spirituality,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. how difficult that must be for somebody who's kind of catching it on the fly.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me say this, because boys, and now we could talk a while. It's just getting revved up and it's time to go. But and I'm going to get everybody's hand. Oh, I do? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Recognizing the male-female component of God, you know, for me, you know, when I started to embrace that idea, it was great or liberating for me, you know, as a man, because that's a whole nother set of attributes that I can relate to using the feminine aspect of it, you know. And so, you know, as much as it's good for women to understand the female or the God as the female gender or the attributes of the femininity, it is also good for the males to it liberates them, it expands them. And see, and that's the same kind of analogy in terms of having these diverse images or whatever in terms of cultures, in terms of seeing God in other colors or whatever. Mm-hmm. It does something for the people who have been deprived of it, mm-hmm. but it also does something for the people who have been deprived in another sense, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's meritous on both sides. And I know I'm trying to get to you.
I ended up, I was commenting on what he was mentioning back there earlier, was working the congregation itself, ended up with going over to multicultural ministries in Chicago with Fred John, was that in working and dealing with congregation specifically was not only language, music, and image are three ways that he was mentioning as people mm-hmm. of different ethnic backgrounds. Presenting to congregation so they can see that there is different language, different image, and different music to the congregations as one that helps bridge the gap for congregations to get that diversity of different cultural backgrounds. And what he had mentioned was when I heard the word language, one of the things I had done was take 2 years of my Native American language and was able to, within time, be able to convince the church that I did the responsive prayer in my language. And, I was able to get a connectedness within the congregation with some of the people in the congregation that I hadn't spoken to that often. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, was working with that vision of the gap of the trouble with cultural differences of congregations itself.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I was thinking about what Mr. Dunn said about how congregation reacted to a black singer. I had just the opposite in the church where I went. We had a black man come in to sing, and his voice was absolutely beautiful. And people were so impressed by him that when he had finished, he presented two or three songs, different ones. Some were very serious, some were more religious, and some were kind of get up, you know, get going. And everybody was tapping their feet and going like this, you know. And when he finished, they'd say more, more, more. So really, he was a big hit in mm-hmm. our church. Mm-hmm. And when the service was over, out in the foyer where people gathered to converse, maybe have a cup of coffee or something, they hugged him and thanked him and told him how much they appreciated his coming. And, this group of people were so very different from those who say no, you know, because I think our minister had a lot to do with it, because one thing too that impressed me that I saw, you go to different churches, you're going to see different things, and painted a blackboard, a player, and drew a big round circle, and then a smaller circle in the middle, and then he had spokes coming down to the center. And he said, you see, here we are out here on the outer circle, but we're all going to the same place. God, that's our goal. That's where we're going. And I see that that's such a good idea to give to everybody who is really searching for God.
Mm-hmm.
But now another thing that I was thinking about, oh, the color of Jesus. When you stop and think, where was he born? What country did he live in?
Mm-hmm.
His mother and father lived there. His physical mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
Were they black or part black? You know, there's a mixture of
mm-hmm.
people. They're not all pure one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, some, there's a lot of pictures of Jesus who are semi-black, not real black, you know,
mm-hmm.
and with dark curly hair, brown eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why in churches or schools for children that they would paint or include white in their image of Jesus.
Well, you know, in the I think in biblically, and I don't know how I'm drawing from an old memory, but I think somewhere in the Bible it says that he had hair like lamb's wool and his feet were like copper or something. And so there is some statements about Jesus being of a dark of some hue, you know, color. But, you know, and I thought about that, but, you know, I didn't bring that in at because that can also get to be a digression, you know. You know, it could be, oh yeah, the black man saying Christ was black, you know, and here we go, you know, and you know, so so I was, but now that you brought it up, I can speak a little bit, but even, you know, even so, it gets back to the same point. In one sense, other than the factual accuracy of it, what does it matter? You know, in one sense, you know.
I've seen black men with white hair because of their age. They just turn gray like everybody else.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm a silver color.
Yeah. Yes.
I was wondering what part music also has played in, wouldn't exactly be imaging, but in making black people not, or Spanish-speaking people not feel a part of our Lutheran church, for example. I mean, our music is all very Northern European.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that's a question.
It is a good question, yeah.
What part does that play also?
Well, you know, well, it's a good question. I don't know where to start answering, except that there are certain affinities for each culture with certain types of music. And as I was last night, I was listening to the concert and going to the services and listening to the singing, and really enjoying the mellow quietness of it, you know. And it goes back to this whole thing about the different kind of flowers. But I also been to Baptist churches where they rock, and I really like that too, you know. And you know, it's been able to sip on the different music and partake. It's just a great thing to do, you know. And if you're going to invite a certain group in, and I think just in terms of, you know, you usually put up things that they're comfortable with. You may play music they're comfortable with. And, you know, I think that that music is one of the blessings of creations, and I think that sharing the different kind of music is sharing different kind of blessings. And I mean, you know, there's certain music that, I mean, I like most music But there's certain music like this, very hard metal rock that I just can't relate to, you know. But most music is good, and I think it can help smooth the exchange. I play a little bit of drums, the kunga, which is one of the first instruments, you know. And I messed my hand, I was going to bring it down, but I messed my hand up. But I've had drum sessions where, you know, it's a real nice way of creating an inclusion, because everybody gets an instrument or a drum, and it's all based on the one, you know. Is you create a polyrhythms. You know, I'll play a rhythm, and then you play a rhythm that's different, but it relates to the certain beat. You know, if I'm going 1 2 3 4, 1 2 3 4, and that's my rhythm, and you're going a different rhythm, but you're coming in on the same one, so it creates harmony. So in a very simple way, you know, we're playing different rhythms, but we realize that it all has to come from the one. And so I've seen, you know, I've had some beautiful experiences of people of different cultures and backgrounds. We get about 5 or 6 drums, and it is such a unifying experience for people to play the drum and feel their part of this complexity of rhythm, and know that they are creating it and a part of it. And it's different, but it's all connected, you know. And there's a guy who goes around and he teaches children. He says, well, you know, remember, we're all from the one. Remember the one. And he plays this rhythm. And it's beautiful. But if you don't open yourself up to the other music like that, you'll never experience that beauty. And it's a great teaching aid, because it symbolically and practically says a lot what we're trying to do. We're all coming from the one. And so when we cut each other off, you know, I used to get a lot of hassles because I would listen to certain classical music and certain things. And I, you know, I come up from this, I grew up in a public housing project, you know, and it was, that was like way offline, you know, at that time. But I heard something that I liked, and I don't listen to, I'm not saying that I'm into classical music, but at certain times, if I'm reading or cleaning the house or whatever, it's the perfect thing. And so I have moods and music for those moods, you know. But if I was to tie myself in just to rhythm and blues or something like that, you know, I would be deprive myself of another whole flavor, you know. So I'm all for the flavors, you know.
The mood music, actually, it's really good, because I took my daughter and my granddaughter down to Mississippi, you know, and we definitely wanted to hear the real music. And of course, I have gone into Chicago quite a bit, because I live close. Mm-hmm. And dancing there, they had all the big bands in, and I thought it was great. Of course, I'm a person who likes a lot of things, you know. I'm not narrow-minded or, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And when you can honestly make yourself, or tell yourself, educate yourself, to be open to other ideas and cultures. Now, speaking of music, what is music? You're expressing your feelings. People in different countries and different places, their music represents how they feel, how they think, what mm-hmm. they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something you said, and I think we're just about done here, you know, stretching out is, and you said that you're open and you're not narrow-minded, but a lot of us, stretching out is a little bit uncomfortable. Oh. Yeah, I think, I mean, not all the time, but going into new cultures, opening yourself up to new experiences, it can be a little uncomfortable, you know.